Good morning, Boker Tov. Welcome back to Living with Emunah. Great to be back together again. Really missed our learning, our studying, our reading, our sharing, our laughing, our growing. I hope everybody was living with Emunah, even in our absence, learning and listening to countless other opportunities. But it's really special and great to be back together again. I want to thank our generous Emunah series sponsors, Drs. Avi and Bella Morgan. I enjoyed an incredible meal with them when I was in Israel, and their amazing family. In memory of Rabbi Dr. Brian Galbert, in memory of Bella's mother, Dr. Ellen Shanzer, we remain incredibly grateful for their generosity, as they also sponsor in the merit that Hashem watch over our holy, precious soldiers. Our series is also generously sponsored anonymously in memory of the fallen soldiers of the B'nai David Yeshiva, Mechina, and Eli, and all the wounded soldiers since October 7th. Today's share sponsored anonymously for the full Shlema speedy recovery of Sarah Bas Michelle Michal, anonymously to Nishmas Bela Bas Moshe, in honor of Hashloshim on Monday. Anonymously, the Nishmas Marvin Matisyo ben David, and by Rivka Fege, in memory of her father, David ben Zev, on his Yuritzeit. Thank you to all of our generous, generous sponsors. Okay, how do we catch up on countless weeks and so many emails and so many stories, so many flights, so many things that happened? It's hard. It's hard, but we'll do our best, because I also want to dive into a brand new Sefer we're going to study and learn together, a remarkable Sefer, which I really was enjoying learning over the summer, and I want to share some of it with you. But first, a few things. So first of all, I was so excited I got to get together with my friend Zev of Ir David. If you haven't been to Ir David, I can't recommend it highly enough. The absolute revelations and miracles of Ir David, to be transported back in time. They've now completed, you can walk what they call the pilgrimage road, all the way from the mikveh, the pool on the bottom. You can walk up all the way to Har HaBayis. The original road, you're walking on the same ground that they walked during the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, the same stones. You can even wipe your finger in certain places on the ash of the burning of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. In fact, I don't want to get in trouble for saying this, but he gave me a vial of ash so that when I officiate at weddings, and the minhag based on the Shulchan Aruch is to put ash on the forehead of the chassan in Meshkachich Yerushalayim, it is actual ash from the burning of the Beis HaMikdash, which in some ways is so sad and tragic and takes us back to that loss which we still feel, and in other ways is so hopeful, because even as we have access to that ash, look how the Jewish people are back in Yerushalayim. I mentioned yesterday in the Parsha Shir, suffering and struggling through the crazy traffic of Yerushalayim. On Tisha B'Av we say in Nachem, Ha'ir HaShomeima V'HaChareva, the empty, barren, desolate, destroyed city, Jerusalem. And today there's traffic everywhere because the Jews have repopulated Yerushalayim after 2,000 years. It is holy, holy traffic. Holy traffic. Anyway, but my friend Zev Avir David, when I went to go see him, gave me this t-shirt, Digging with Emunah. Ir David, and on the back, of course, number 23. His and hers, since Yocheved has filled in with the Emunah shir, he gave me one for her too. Digging with Emunah, City of David, Ancient Jerusalem. Digging with Emunah, number 23. They continue to dig with Emunah, and they find all kinds of amazing, amazing things. We got to see some excavations that aren't even yet open to the public. Big thank you to Zev. Appreciate his friendship, his leadership, all that he does at Ir David, and for this great t-shirt, which I really enjoy. Okay, let's read a couple of emails, then we'll dive into our new text. There are source sheets up here. If you want to learn and listen, we'll try to post them in the WhatsApp group. Just a reminder, we are moving over from WhatsApp groups to WhatsApp community, one community for Emunah. We're doing that because it's more safe and secure. Nobody could join who shouldn't be. Nobody can see who else is in it. So you won't get solicited by anyone who shouldn't have access to your number. So if you haven't yet switched over, switch over, because the current Emunah groups are going to cease, and we're only going to post in the Emunah community. There's a link in the group, so click it so you join. Dear Rabbi Goldberg, thank you for the incredible shiur every single week. It's practical, insightful, and inspired. Not everybody agrees. It's among the greatest joys and most gratifying and satisfying things in my life to travel the world and meet people who are learning and living and listening to Emunah with us. It's incredible. My kids don't think it's so incredible, but I think it's incredible. It's incredible and it's beautiful. So I won't say where or when, and certainly not who, but a man came over to me on one of my recent travels and he said to me, my family had a difficult year this past year. We had health issues, parnassus. We had a difficult year this past year. And I just want to thank you, because the Emunah Shir got my wife through it. He said, it happens to be I disagree with almost everything you say, but it got my wife through it, and for that I want to thank you. So I said, I also disagree often with what I say. So don't feel bad. These are complicated things. You say it one week, you disagree with it the next week. The key is that what I found fascinating is he's listening to it. How do you know you disagree with almost everything someone says? Because you're listening. If you weren't listening, you wouldn't know you disagree. Anyway, so that was among the greatest. I would like to share a beautiful moment Hashem gifted me this morning. I was asked to sit with a patient being admitted to a psychiatric hospital. My Uber driver dropped me off in a completely wrong place about 10 minutes away. I didn't know the area. I was frustrated, and the person I was taking over for was already desperate to leave. As I walked toward the hospital, I kept taking deep breaths and repeating to myself, I am where I'm meant to be. I am where I'm meant to be. And then as I walked through the hospital grounds, a young Jewish patient walking back from a walk. Second she saw me, a Hamish Jewish woman, her whole face lit up. She was overwhelmed with emotion. She told me how incredibly lonely she feels, how rarely she sees another Jewish person, especially in a psychiatric hospital. I told her she's loved. She's not forgotten. She's not alone. I happen to have some gifts with me, which I gave her. We exchanged numbers, and I'll be going back to visit her in Mirz Hashem. And suddenly, that wrong Uber drop-off didn't feel wrong at all. Maybe I wasn't lost. Maybe I was being led. And today I was able to implement what we learn every week. I was exactly where I was meant to be. Thank you again. So a beautiful ability to feel that hug, that kiss from Hashem, to live life in moments that could be and should be frustrating, and instead to say, embrace, lean in. Sometimes we discover quickly why, and other times we wonder, but always we are where we are meant to be. I got several emails with questions over the summer, and I want to get into it as we'll learn with Emunah, and one of them is about this. One of them is this question. Is it a cop-out? This is the first time anyone ever wrote it to me this way. To say Y-A-W-Y-A-S-T-B, took me a minute to figure that out. You are where you are supposed to be. It's a new acronym. It's a long acronym, so I'm not even sure you save much. But the author writes, to say Y-A-W-Y-A-S-T-B is to say you got to where you are at this very moment without agency, meaning no decision that you have made up to now has brought you to the place that you are. Hashem has guided you. For example, the city I live in and the job I currently have are because Hashem thinks this is the best place for me. And nothing I could have done would have changed that. At least that's how the concept is being portrayed, in my opinion. I feel that could lead to a lack of responsibility in one's actions. And this is a question I get asked. Is it a cop-out? Are we passing the buck? Are we blaming another? Are we hiding behind Hashem? Are we hiding behind Hashem? That's what happens when you come to Shir at BRS. It's Minyanim around the clock. You're going to hear a shofar. It's a beautiful thing. So maybe some people are going to hide behind Y-A-W-Y-A-S-T-B. We're not where we are because I left late. We're not stuck on the side of the highway because I didn't fill with gas. We're not where we are because I made the decision to be here. Oh, we are where we're meant to be. What could you do? And therefore, nobody has to take responsibility or accountability. Nobody has to own the consequences. Nobody has to grow or improve or repair. Nobody owes anyone ever an apology because you're always where you're supposed to be. Yeah, you were sitting waiting for me and I ran late and I didn't care, but you were where you were supposed to be. Is it a cop-out? So maybe you'll respond, and I won't read the, maybe you'll respond. But anyway, but to always say Y-A-W-Y-A-S-T-B can be a coping mechanism, in my opinion. People can make bad decisions. It'll lead to paths that maybe will make it harder to accomplish your avoda in life. To always say it means no bechira, to never say it means no ashkacha. Maybe it means sometimes. This was a question, not only the author of this email, but in general. So I want to reiterate. Now, first of all, it's complicated. I want to say clearly, in our shir, we oversimplify. And we do that on purpose. Because I think when we overcomplicate, we end up confused. And we end up not living with the emuna that could bring the peace, the serenity, the happiness, the equanimity that we're all looking and yearning and searching for. When we overcomplicate the different models and modalities of emuna, the Rambam's version, or Rav Sadia Gaon's version, versus Rabbeinu Bachya's version in Chavos HaLevavos, versus Rabbi Nachman's version, we could academically study all the different approaches to emuna. Emuna klalis, the general emuna, emuna pratis, specific emuna. Is emuna reciprocal and proportional to the faith you have, or is everything that happens from Hashem? It is a complicated sugya. And we could academically present it, maybe we will one day, as a separate series, to go through the sources and to see the different approaches and to validate different ways that people come at it. But for our purposes, and in this year, we oversimplify. We go with Rabbi Nachman and we go with what is the predominant, certainly Hasidish approach, but not only, which says that everything is from Hashem. Absolutely everything is from Hashem. The Ishbitz approach that takes it to the extreme, that not only is everything that happens to us from Hashem, But everything that happens through us is also from Hashem. Every decision we make, good and bad, every choice that we make, not only to do the right thing, but even when we make a choice to do the wrong thing, even that was orchestrated, curated, organized from above, from Hashem. How do you understand that? How does that make sense? How is that meaningful? Some of the great Rabbanim I met with in Israel, I asked this question because I'm still on this journey and I'm still trying to work this through. When is it our hishtadlus, our initiative and our effort? And when is it from Hashem? When do we say absolutely everything is from Him? And what about my bechira, my nikudas of bechira? There's a moment of free will, of autonomy, of choice. It's about me. It comes down to me. So one of the people I asked, a great Rav, I actually quoted him in my article this week as well, who has one of the largest shiurim in the largest yeshiva in Israel, maybe in the world. And he told me a story. He said every Rosh Chodesh, he tries to get an aliyah, not for honor or glory or ego. He's a very, very humble person, but he's a magashir, he's a rebbe, he teaches Torah. So he feels like Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of the new month, particularly it was Rosh Chodesh Elul, the new zman in yeshiva was starting. So to get a bracha, to say a birchas haTorah, is for him a very big thing. Now here it would mean going up to the gabbai, asking to replace, displace somebody else. In Israel, in the community he lives in, the minyan factory he goes to, every minyan, 10 shekel Kohen, 10 shekel Levi, 10 shekel Yisrael, they auction it off. So he was bidding to get shlishi. And I guess people know who he is. Usually when he bids, he wins. But someone was bidding against him. And he went up 20 shekel, 30 shekel, 50 shekel. When the guy said 60 shekel, he said, I'm done, I'm out. Be a nice thing. I like to get an aliyah on Rosh Chodesh, particularly Rosh Chodesh Elul. If I don't get the aliyah, I can live. I'm out. So the other guy bought the aliyah. He got it for 60 shekel. Turns out there was no coin. There was no coin in the room. So what do you do when there's no coin? So you give a Yisrael bimkom coin. You give a Yisrael in lieu of the coin. So the gabbai saw that this Rav was bidding, and he said, you know, there's no coin, so no, you take the Yisrael bimkom coin. Turns out he got his aliyah without paying, without having to go up to the 60 shekel. So I asked him afterwards. It's an amazing. So he saw that as a hug and a kiss from Hashem, that maybe whatever Kohanim were planning to come to that minyan went to another. There was no coin there. So even though he lost the bidding, he got the aliyah and he got it for nothing or for the original 10 shekel. And it was all a hug and a kiss and a wink from Hashem. Hashem is amazing. But I asked, was that Hashem or was that you? Was the Kohen's bechira to not go to the minyan? Kohen had free will, didn't attend that minyan. The other guy had free will to be bidding against you. Hashem could have made it. You got shlishi for your original 10 shekel. How does it work? How does it work? Complicated. I don't want to say I stumped him, but I was sort of validated and relieved to see that, you know, even great Rabbanim who give some of the highest level shiurim in the world, this is a difficult sugya. It's tough. It's okay. If nothing else, I want to tell you, even though we oversimplify and we do it on purpose and intentionally, it's complicated. But I think here's how it goes. Here's how I see it. Here's how I try to live it. When there's a decision to be made, when there's a decision that has to happen, when there's a choice, it's entirely up to us. Who am I going to date? Who am I going to marry? What job am I going to take? Where am I going to live? What minyan will I go to? Will I bid for the aliyah? When there's a decision or an action, it's entirely up to us. Once we've done our initiative, our effort, made our decision, the outcome, the result is entirely up to Him. Entirely up to Him. I could decide to bid for an aliyah. I want aliyah that day. I can't control who else is bidding. I can't control whether Kohanim came or not. That Hashem has the impact. That Hashem orchestrates. Did my alarm clock go off? Did I make the minyan I wanted? Did I end up at a later one? When I got there, where I got, how I went? Hashem sets so many variables in place, in motion. It creates a stage and an opportunity. And that's where I make my decision. And the decision is an expression of my free will, of my bechira. And I'm responsible. And I have to own the outcome. And I experience the consequences. And I am accountable. But the result, that comes from Hashem. So I'm not entitled to make you wait because I'm late, because I don't care about time. I'm not entitled to do that and then just tell you, you are where you're meant to be, sitting and waiting like a doofwad because I told you I'd be there at a certain time and I didn't care and I didn't show up. And then I'm just going to come and smile and not apologize because I'm going to tell you, you are where you're meant to be. Or I ran late getting ready, so a whole this is never me, by the way. But so our whole family ran late and missed the flight. And when everyone's really angry and upset and says, where were you? We had an agreed upon time we would leave. And I say, hey, Chevra, we are where we're meant to be. Relax, we missed the flight. We're meant to be here. No, no. You have to apologize, and you have to be sincere, and you have to have remorse, and you have to experience a healthy sense of regret, and you have to learn and grow for the next time, for the next time. However, the outcome, the result, there is an element of where. So I don't think it's a contradiction. I think they can both happen simultaneously. I think it's possible to say that when there's a decision to be made, the decision is entirely up to me. But when there's an outcome or result to that decision, this was orchestrated from above. And even if that does oversimplify in some ways, that is how Emunah impacts our life so positively. That's what gives us the tools and the strength to be able to navigate what we do in the way that we do. A couple more emails, and let's dive into the text. Maybe somebody just unplugged that machine they just plugged in, or tell them to. So thank you, Kara, so that it can quiet. Whole vacation was nice and well-deserved. I was makabel, someone writes. I was makabel. I accepted upon myself to learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch after Shavuos. I started learning the halachos of Suda Parshas Ekev, where the halach of benching are found, which was great Ashgacha. Someone says, I took upon myself to learn the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the shortened version of the Shulchan Aruch, every day learn a little, and therefore cover all of Jewish law. And they're up to the part about the laws of having a meal. Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that after making hamotzi, I'll read it to you inside because he sent it to me. He writes, after making hamotzi, you should say Divrei Torah at the meal after you make hamotzi. I'm reading to you from, this is the Shulchan Aruch, and then the Mishnah Berurah. Mishnah Berurah says, afilu b'divrei Torah v'davka b'shas achil gufa mishum sakana, that when you eat, every act of eating is dangerous. It could go down the wrong pipe. It could be what you're eating is spoiled or contaminated. It could be you won't have a positive reaction. We don't think of it this way, and we shouldn't, or it would be debilitating. But every act of eating, certainly in antiquity, had an implicit danger to it. And so the merit we get by introducing Divrei Torah. A meal shouldn't just be frivolous. You shouldn't just shoot the breeze. You shouldn't schmooze. But introduce at least some Divrei Torah to the meal. What qualifies as Divrei Torah? Says the Mishnah Berurah, Al kaponim yomar eza mizmor. After you make hamotzi and you take a bite of bread, you can share a Dvar Torah on the parsha, the Emunah, whatever you want. Or you could read a kapitel of Tehillim. And which would be a good one to read? The Tov Lomar, Acha Birchas Hamotzi, Mizmor Hashem Roi Lo Achzar, Tu Divrei Torah, Utfila Amizur Nosov. Every time you make hamotzi, not only on Shabbos, every time you make hamotzi during the week, if you do, then say, Kapitel Chaf Gimel, chapter 23. So this individual who took on to learn Kitzur Shulchan Aruch encountered, he had a Psalm 23 sighting. And what was the sighting? That the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, I'm sorry, not the Mishnah, but the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says that you should, every time you break bread, say chapter 23. So if you're a Litvak, he writes, we think Mizmor David is only for Chassidus Shal HaShiras. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says it's for all meals. Lest you think, because Chassidim, we hear at BRS, every Shal Shiras, at Avid Aravin, we say Mizmor David, Chav Gimel, three times. We sing it three different tunes, we sing it three different ways, three times at Shal Shiras. But it's not just Chassidim at Shal Shiras. A Litva, Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, also every meal. Last one, Rabbi Goldberg, it's Wednesday, and I'm missing listening to Living with Emunah Shir while you're on your well-deserved break. I'm happy to hear it was a well-deserved break. I got some hate mail that says, how dare you take a break? We need our Living with Emunah. Anyway, but it was with love. It was from somebody who I love. I had to share a Psalm 23 sighting at work. I'm a dentist teaching in a dental hygiene program. And one of my students, a devout Christian, walked into the clinic with her Stanley. Stanley's not her husband or boyfriend or the name of her dog. You know what a Stanley is? If you don't know what a Stanley is, you're lucky that you haven't had to buy your child a super overpriced, expensive, very heavy coffee cup that they'll probably lose and leave somewhere within the first week of getting it. But anyway, a Stanley is a very hot and heavy coffee cup. Anyway, so this non-Jewish Christian walked into her dental clinic with her Stanley, and it caught my eye, and I had to take a picture. Her Stanley is the English translation of Psalm 23. And she told me she looks at it throughout the day to give her encouragement. Hope you enjoy your time off. Looking forward to learning together again soon. So I don't know. It's a problem because then you can't bring your Stanley. Not that you'd bring it into the bathroom anyway, but where else could you not bring it? If you have Psalm 23, run through the dishwasher. You're running Tehillim Chaf Gimel through the dishwasher. I don't know. Maybe you got to wash it by hand. But it's a beautiful thing. The coffee mug all day long, the dental hygiene program to be looking at Psalm 23. Okay. A lot more to cover always, but digging with Emunah, and all of our emails. Okay, I want to start a new Sefer today. This Sefer someone gifted me, my dear friend Mandy, Or V'chiyas Nafshenu. The Sefer is called Or V'chiyas Nafshenu. Where does that language come from? Or V'chiyas Nafshenu. This language is a famous language of the Rebbe Rashab. The Rebbe Rashab, Lubavitcher Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, said it about Yutes Kislev, the Rosh Hashanah of Chassidus, and he described it in that way, the light and the life of our souls that was given to us. And the Sefer is called Nosim B'Toras HaChassidus, topics in the area of Chassidus, and there's a whole section of Emunah, which is what I want to learn a piece apart together with. Who is the author of Avraham Menachem Mendel Vechter? Who was he? Rav Mendel Vechter. Fascinating and somewhat unusual person in the Hasidic world. Born in Hungary in 1947. I think it's always important to know a little biography of the person whose Torah that you're learning. He's born in Hungary in 1947 into a Sigit Satmar family. He moved to Canada as a child and later became deeply connected to the Satmar Hasidim, Satmar Rebbe in Williamsburg. Siri's Talmud Chacham, a Machanech, a founder of the Satmar Yeshiva. And what makes his story remarkable is that he immigrated, not just from Hungary to Canada to Williamsburg, physically, but he immigrated spiritually from the world of Satmar to Chabad. And while he was still in Satmar, he became intrigued by Chabad Chassidus and started learning with a major Chabad Mashpia. And he ultimately became very connected to Chabad, which is a little bit controversial in the world of Satmar, let's just say. Might have been attacked for it in certain ways. The Lubavitcher Rebbe referred to him as a Baal Masiros Nefesh al Chabad uvepoel, someone who had demonstrated sacrifice for his connection to Chabad. He ultimately moved to Kiryat Malachi and to Har Chabad, where he became a prominent Mashpia and a Resh Kolo. So he still dressed in his Satmar dress and practiced his Satmar Minhagim, but he became connected to and influential in Chabad, which is very fascinating. Okay, a little background, a little biography of him. And with that, let's start. So you have in front of you, we'll try to put the sources in the Emunah community. Maybe we won't put it in the Emunah group, we'll put it in the Emunah community as additional motivation for you to join the Emunah community. This is Maimer Sheni, the second Maimer in the area of Emunah, in his Sefer Anosim B'Torah HaChassidus. Chovas Mukshiyus HaEmunah, the obligation to not just learn or study academically, to not debate different models or modalities of Emunah, but to live, to feel Emunah with our senses, to experience it every day in our lives. Kasher Oskim B'Inyan HaEmunah B'Hashem. You see it? You got me? We're on page 19. When you are occupied with the topic of Emunah and Hashem, Aleinu Ladas, we must know, She'emunah tzricha leskayim ba'odam ba'ofen mukhshi v'chai. Emunah can't be theoretical or academic or conceptual. Emunah shouldn't live in an ivory tower. Emunah has to be practical. Emunah has to be something that you experience and you express with your senses. It has to be a living. It shouldn't be living with Emunah. It should be Emunah alive. K'maymar HaKosov, as the Pasuk says in the Navi Chabakuk, V'tzadik be'emunaso yichyeh. The tzaddik, the righteous man or woman, they find life. How? Be'emunah. Emunah is the foundation of life. Emunah gives us life. If a person is making their way through this world and they don't have Emunah, they're not grounded in Emunah, they don't do it with a sense, there is someone and something bigger than me. There is meaning and there is purpose to this universe. If a person thinks my life is just coincidence and chance, I am just a subject of randomness, then you're not even alive. Then you're dead while you're alive. To really be alive, to really live, is to live and navigate this world be'emuna. U'mishum kach, and therefore, kidei lagia li'yishum shel mitzvos ha'emuna, yesh tzorach b'limud ma'amik shel shnei chalakim. To really get to this place of the mitzvah of emuna, a person has to study in depth these two things. Number one, birur ha'gedah shel mitzvos ha'emuna, ketzem mekayim mitzvah zu l'tanah. If I want to study the mitzvah of shofar, we just heard the shofar, and we blow the shofar. We're doing it to practice now. We're doing it, as I wrote about last week's article, because if real growth is the capacity, the predicated on the capacity to listen. Last week, the Ben Sora Mora, and Enoshameh B'Kol Aviv B'Kol Imo, the wayward, rebellious child who's hopeless and irredeemable, we reject. Why? Enoshameh. They are not capable of being influenced. If someone is incapable of being influenced, it is hopeless. I love to quote John Gottman, the great marriage authority, who says, I think 83%, whatever the number was, one of the biggest ways he can predict a marriage won't work is if a person is not open to influence. Both parties need to be open to saying, let me hear you, maybe I'm wrong. Let me hear your perspective. I could change, I can grow, I can see things different than the way I do. And I'm open to influence, I'm open to being influenced. But if a person is fixed, they're finished, if a person is, this is what you see is what you get, and I will be this way forever, and nothing about me will ever change, my viewpoints, my practices, my behaviors, my everything, I'm not open to influence, they are hopeless, and that relationship, sadly, is hopeless. The prerequisite to a healthy relationship are both parties being open to influence. So I suggested that maybe the reason we hear the shofar every day of Elul is because shofar is all about listening and hearing. We start every day of Elul remembering that if this is the month of growth and change, I have to work on my capacity to hear. I have to listen. I have to be open to listening and to influence. So the mitzvah of shofar, you got to talk about the mitzvah of shofar. Can a shofar have a crack? Can a shofar have a hole? How do you define a tekiah, a shvarim, a trua? Every mitzvah has its gedder. Every mitzvah has its definition, its shear, its measure. Soon we'll sit in the sukkah. How tall is a sukkah? How short can a sukkah? How many walls? What does the schach have to look like? What's the definition of a sukkah? We'll shake the dalad minim. What's a lulav? What a hadassah? My rabbis and esrog. Every mitzvah. You light the Shabbos candle. How many candles? How long does it have to be lit? When do you light? How do you light? Every mitzvah has its. So how do you fulfill the mitzvah of emunah? If we assume emunah is a mitzvah, which is an if. If? You're wondering, what do you mean if? So we learned this. One of the original emunah shiurim, go back almost 400. Is emunah a mitzvah? So we assume simply yes. I think we learned this from the Nesivos Shalom, the Slonim Rebbe. What's the argument that emunah is not a mitzvah? It doesn't make sense to command belief in you. If you have to command you to believe in me, and you didn't believe in me until I commanded, then do you really believe? So some believe, some suggest, emunah is not a mitzvah, emunah is the prerequisite to all mitzvahs. It's the precursor, it's the foundation, it's the assumption. You can't command to believe. If you didn't believe before I commanded, you don't believe. So belief is the preface to commandments. So it in itself is not a mitzvah. How do you count the Ten Commandments? Believe it or not, it's a machlokas. It's a debate. Do you count the Ten Commandments? Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God. Believe in God, is that the first? Or no, that is the assumption, the prerequisite, and then the Ten Commandments only start after. So the first variable here, the first curriculum is, he says, Rav Wachter, Rav Menachem Mendel, Rav Mendel Wachter. The first is, how do you define emunah? If emunah is a mitzvah, like shofar, like sukkah, like the dalad minim, like lighting Shabbos candles, like putting on tefillin, how do you define the mitzvah? Number two, ketzad hovchem es emunah l'davar hamachayeyu beruchnius mevi lahanaga b'kiyum mitzvos ma'asiyos. If once I define it, how do I live it? How do I deploy it? How do I practice it? How does it inform and inspire my life? How do I wear it on my sleeve? How does it define who I am? How does it express itself? So, b'agdars mitzvos emunah nemar b'sefer charedim. When it comes to the definition, let's start with the definition of the mitzvah of emunah. Shteit in the sefer charedim shemitzvah that tzrich lios kol muchshis etzel ha'adam ad she'emunah hi kemo she'roes hadvarim be'einav. Says the charedim, the mitzvah of emunah has to be so meaningful, practical, real, that it's almost tangible. You see Hashem everywhere, and you see a person living a life who sees Hashem everywhere. That person, in the way that they speak, in the way they dress, in the choices they make, in their behavior, in their conduct, in their life, in their demeanor. Remember we learned about, from the Baal Shem, the idea of equanimity, the concept of equanimity. Remember we studied this too in the Emunah Shir at length. Nehilig Basham is Tzava. We talked about this concept of it's all equal to me. My highs are not too high, my lows are not too low. My emotions don't vacillate in some extreme way, because if I know that everything is orchestrated, everything is from Hashem, then it's all built in. And so my demeanor is one of calm and one of serenity. I'm not too excitable. Somebody who's excitable in either direction is because they're startled or they're shocked. And they didn't anticipate and see and know that it's all from Hashem. You remember we studied this at length several months? So a person's demeanor itself can express their faith in Hashem. Are you calm? Are you serene? Are you anxious? Are you worried? Are you frazzled? Are you nervous? Are you anxious? Are you on edge? Chazon Ish, we also learn, writes, Daiga, worry is an act of kfira, is heresy. It's not a criticism of someone who struggles with anxiety clinically. Chalila, we have no criticism whatsoever. That's not a person's choice, not a person we blame, and we only have love and support. But it means a person who allows or chooses to be anxious, who chooses to worry, that worry has knocked God out of the equation. Because if we really surrendered and submitted to Hashem, if we really knew and lived and felt, it's all going to be the way it's meant to be. I've done what's up to me. I've put in my work. I've taken my initiative. I've made my decisions. I've expressed my choices. I've done my part. And now what will the outcome or result be? I'm so worried. I'm so worried. I'm so worried. I have a daughter, Baruch Hashem, Bli Ayin Hara, who's due in Israel in a few days. And I don't know if she's having a girl or boy, and I don't know when she's going to give birth, and I don't know if it is a boy, when it will be, and how close to Rosh Hashanah, and can I be there, if, and what will it mean, and will there be a impossible and difficult choice to make about my obligation and commitment here, and the ability to be there. I don't know. I don't know. I won't lie and say I don't think about it, but I try not to worry about it. Because there's nothing for me to do. Maybe there are things for her to do, but there's nothing for me to do. Like she could eat a lot of spicy food and go on a lot of long walks and do a lot of things. But there's nothing for me to do. Nothing for me to do. So if I worry, that won't change the gender of the baby or determine when the baby will be born or resolve what could be a potential conflict on the calendar for me, a wonderful one, in Mirtz Hashem, Baruch Hashem, I'm not complaining about it. Worry won't change anything. All it does, first of all, will destroy every day of happiness I could have now. It could, God forbid, drive a wedge between me and my daughter, who could feel guilty because I'm so worried and don't want to be in that position. Hopefully she's not listening to this. Right? It won't do anything positive, only negative. But also, and maybe most of all, it also knocks Hashem out of the equation. Everything will be the way it's supposed to be. Hashem controls the calendar and everything else. And He does it for a reason. And it will be the way it's supposed to and meant to be. Is there anything more calming in the world? Every time you start to feel anxious and worried, and what's going to be, and who should I talk to, and how can I plan, and how should I prepare? And you take that deep breath and you say, no, you know what, I forgot. He's in charge, He's in control. And the outcome not only is going to, it'll all work out in the end, the outcome is the ideal because it's the one that He's going to provide, and He only provides the ideal. And so, wow, what a relief. Wow. Imagine Hashem said to me, buddy, go to sleep, relax. I stay up all night because I got it. I got it. I worked the calendar. I got it all worked out. And everything's going to be the way it's supposed to be. And it's all going to be good. And you just go do your thing. You relax. If Hashem wrote me that as an email, would I not say, oh, what a relief. That's unbelievable. I'm so happy to hear. I can exhale. I'm calm. It's all good. Wow, what a relief. He did do that. And He does do that every single day. It's called the mitzvah of emunah. It's called the mitzvah of emunah. So our very demeanor, are we frazzled? Are we frustrated? Are we anxious? Are we angry? Are we envious? All of that demonstrates and reflects a lack of emunah. Because if we lived with emunah, by emunah I mean bitachon. We use those words interchangeably. But if we lived with the bitachon, the faith, the trust, the security that He's in charge, He's in control, it's all up to Him, then I'd be relaxed. I'd be calm. The greatest people I know, men and women, the holiest, the highest, the most spiritual, are also the most calm. They have the world on their shoulders. Many of these tzaddikim, these gedolim, they're great people. They've got the world on their shoulders. Their responsibility, the burden they bear, what they carry, you would think that they are about to collapse under it. You'd think that they look the most anxious and worried, and they are the most calm, the most serene, because the greater emunah, the more calm you have. If you want the antidote to wrinkles, it ain't Botox. It's emunah. And that was free. I didn't even charge you for that. And you can have it every day. And you can still smile afterwards. It's the best part. Emunah, in your demeanor. So Bahagdaras, from the second paragraph, Bahagdaras mitzvahs emunah, nemar b'sefer charidim, shetz mitzvahs zilios kol muchshus, it has to be so demonstrable, so sensory. Ad she'emunah kemo she'ros dvaran be'inav. As if you see me kanat alamad, And here he's quoting the Sefer Haredim. You see, Shapirish Yediyah Zu Tzarch Lios Kein Ria Betokaf HaAmuna. Doma Lamaska Be'enei Sechlo Kilo Re'eh Be'enav Bisro. Like I see this table in front of me, like I see people in front of me, as clear as that is the clarity I have to have, that's the Amunah. I have such clarity that if I don't have it, I wasn't meant to have it. I have such clarity that this outcome is from Hashem. I have such clarity that it is tangible. It's palpable. I have such clarity that you can see it in who I am and how I live. Biram, however, Dvar Shal Acharidim Nemre Bagdar Smetzis Amunah Kishal Atzma. Aval Heim Einam Oskim B'Sheila Ketzed Achein Yichol Amunah Lifal Al Hanhagas Adam. V'davar Pashat Hu. Sha'derach Lekach Sh'Amunah Tashpi Al Yishiyoso Shal Adam. So you have to have the conviction. The first step is know what it is and carry that conviction. Carry that conviction. I know that my mother and father are my mother and father. I never did a paternity test. We haven't done a DNA test. Maybe I have some similarities. Maybe I look a little bit like them. But I have absolute conviction. Not 99%, not 100%, 110%. I know that my mother and father are my mother and father. That's the conviction. There's no one and nothing anyone can say that would make me doubt it. In the least, I know they are my parents. I know they are. One is the knowledge and the conviction and the confidence that I carry. The other is, okay, now that I know they're my parents, what does that mean? What does that look like? When people come to shul and they see that my father is sitting there and I'm there, would a stranger who walked in notice any interaction between the two of us that they would conclude, oh, that must be his father? Or does he look like anyone else in the room? One is the conviction, the confidence that if you'd come up to me and say, do you believe that that man is your father? Yes, 100%. Another is, you see that I get a bracha from him Friday night. Maybe I'm concerned and go over and make sure he's okay, something I don't do to somebody else. You can see somebody, a spectator, an observer would notice. So the same is true with our Father in heaven, Avinu Shebashamayim. One, the first step of Emunah, he writes, is the clarity and the conviction that there is a creator, that he's my father, that I exist only because of him, that there is a relationship. That's the academic, the conceptual, that's the clarity, that's the conviction that I know he's my father. The second is good. Now, when I watch and observe the way that you interact, do you really believe he's your father? Does your life and your lifestyle reflect that you know and that you believe he's your father? Do you invoke him? Do you talk about him? Do you thank him? Do you turn to him? Do you rely on him? Do you care what he thinks? Do you want him to be happy? Do you give him nachas, pride, like we wrote about this week? Is it shel yichya? Is it living? Is it living? There are sadly people I know who know with conviction and clarity that their mother and father are their mother and father, and they haven't spoken to them in weeks or months. Sadly. And they're not interested in connecting with them. So you can know something with conviction and clarity, but not be living it and demonstrating it. To be living it fully. Turn the page 20. Agabe hageder hilchati shekosav bal acharedim linyan mitzvah se'emuna hosifu b'chatzos chasidim od v'od magdera shel emuna. On top of the geder, on top of the original boundary or definition in halacha of the bal acharedim of the mitzvah of emuna. The Baal HaCharedim gave us the dictionary definition of Emunah, the mitzvah, the encyclopedic, the legal definition of Emunah. But in the courtyards of the Hasidim, a chatzer, a Rebbe has a chatzer, he has a court. In the court of the Hasidim, in the courts of the Hasidim, not the legal courts, but the majestic, the royal courts, in the courts of the Hasidim, they've piled on the foundational legal definition of Emunah more definitions. Kasher b'rosh v'rishon hidgish marin ha b'Hashem tov, b'miyuchad es inyan emunah b'ashkach ha'pratis al kol yitzur nivra. This is what I was telling you. The b'Hashem tov came along and he simplified, oversimplified. Until the b'Hashem it was complicated. You could get together and you could debate. Hashkach, how involved in Hashem? How does that work with free will? Is it in every detail? Is it only in the big picture, not the little ones? In what level of involvement? Does it depend on who you are and how much you believe in him? All kinds of complications. Came to Baal Shem and he said, I don't care who you are, and I don't care how you live, I don't care what level you're on, everything in your life and in the world, it's all from Hashem. Period, end of sentence, plain and simple. Baal Shem Tov came along and he simplified. Hashkacha prata akol yitzur nivra. every leaf, every chirp of every bird, certainly every plane and every flight, and whether it took off on time, everything in and about your life, everything that happens to you and through you, it's all Hashem. Shemavur lahalon yikaron zanovei mitoch hatfisa shelinyan achdus Hashem kivishin nilmada bebeis midrasho. All this comes from the Baal Shem Tov's approach that Hashem, if this universe is the unity of Hashem's existence, then Hashem permeates everything in it. Kedivrei Hakasuv, v'yadata yom v'ashivosa levavecha, ki avaya k'Hashem u'alokim. Know today and place in your hearts that God, that HaYehovah v'yev, the Hashem, who was, is, and will be, is our God. Haynu sh'ateva haba mishem elokim. That means that what comes from the name God, Elohim is begematria teva. Teva is nature. What looks like, and we confuse the natural world around us, and you'll say, now that person got that illness, that's because their cells were attacked by that disease. Oh, that hurricane, that's because the waves and the moon and the rotation on the earth on its axis and the ayin hara I just gave all created that hurricane. That's not God. Teva. We think there's this thing called nature. Nature. The natural world, the natural order, there's nature. There's no nature. Nature, Elohim, is gematria teva. Nature obscures God. Master al orha Elohim, abilti mugbal, hashorabo machayehu, ulam be'emes ein od milvado. Ein od milvado. There is no one and there's nothing but him. There is no nature. Nature is a disguise of Hashem. Nature is a costume he wears. But under that costume and under that disguise is also always, of course, Hashem. He created rules of nature and he set them in motion, but they're his rules and he can suspend them anytime he wants. So don't get confused by the fact that there's rules of nature that are set in motion, that there is something called nature that operates independent of Hashem. There is no nature that operates independent of Hashem. Nature operates by rules. They're his rules. And he can change them anytime he wants. He can interfere or suspend them whenever he wants because ein od milvado, there is no one and there is nothing but Hashem. Said the Baal Shem, and this is our philosophy of this year, and this is Nishmasi, which we're about to launch. This is what it's all about. Simply. Now, there's a term for it. We call it Emunah Pshuta. Emunah Pshuta. Emunah Pshuta. Emunah Pshuta. Simple Emunah. The pendulum is swinging back, and the world is returning. Whether it's through pnimius and neo-chassidus or whatever words you want to use to describe it, but we overcomplicated. We lived in this world where we made things because we thought we were smarter. When we use big fancy words, certainly those that originate in Latin, and we thought that the more academic and the more conceptual and the more we could show there's duality and ontological and axiological and the fancier the words, the more complicated we made it, the smarter that we felt, and the more sophisticated we thought we were. And the conclusion of the result where our kids were like, yeah, I don't know what's going on here. If there's a God, no God, you're having all these debates, you're bringing all these different versions and approaches. And at the end of the day, I'm lost and I'm confused and I'm lonely and I'm anxious. And it's time to bring the world back to the simple Emunah Pshuta that many of our Bubbies and our Zadies had. The Emunah Pshuta. We've done this in other ways too. My friend Rabbi Steven Berg wrote an article years ago where he talked about how our Bubbies and our Zaydis, our great Bubbies, they didn't understand a word of the Tehillim they said, but the Tehillim was saturated with tears. And our daughters, he says in our case, they stay up all night studying for these tests. For every Perek on Tehillim, they have to memorize Rashi and the Metsudas and the Malbim and the Ibn Ezra and 400 different commentaries on the Pasuk in Tehillim that they have to memorize. And if they don't get the grade, they won't get into the seminary. They won't get to the seminary, they won't get the Shidduch, and they won't get the Shidduch. And meanwhile, their Tehillim isn't opened. And when they see Tehillim, all they feel is anxiousness and anxiety about the final they had to take on Tehillim and stay up all night. And he bemoans that fact. And of course, the answer is somewhere in between. I'm not suggesting we be illiterate or be ignorant. Yocheva, one of our prized possessions, is her Babi's Tehillim, which is worn out through and through. And I loved our Babi, Zichrono Levracha. But I'm pretty sure that if you put a perek in front of her and said, translate these words, she would not have been able to. But she said Tehillim, she said it every day, and she said it more authentically than maybe anyone I know. For her, Tehillim was a platform for a conversation with Hashem. And Emunah Pshuta. There was no, which modality, which model do we follow? And is it Hashgacha Klolos, Hashgacha Pratus, and what is the Malbim? So is it? It's like, Eibishter. The Ribbono Shalom got her through the Holocaust despite what she lost, got her, gave her her Zaidi, and so grateful for her one son of the family he built. And Hashem was with her every day, all day, and her whole day was one ongoing conversation with him. Why? Because that's Emunah Pshuta. That's the simplified Emunah. That's what we have to bring and swing the pendulum back. That's what we need. It's what our kids need. It's what we need to model for them. It's what our educators need to learn and live so they can teach to that next generation, to that Emunah Pshuta. It's Pashut. Not confusing, and it's not complicated. And if you want to later on, because it's fun, the intellectual gymnastics to explore the how complicated it is, good, have fun. But bring it back to the Emunah Pshuta. The Emunah Pshuta of Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof, who's flipping the hay and feeding the cows, and his whole day is one ongoing conversation with Hashem, if I were a rich man. To bring it back to that Emunah Pshuta, a simple Emunah. Everything about that, the brilliance in it, was that simplicity. It was an Emunah Pshuta, it was a simplicity of Emunah, and it was a simplicity of love. Today, what's the definition of love? How do you know if you're in love? What is love? It says, for 25 years, I've washed your clothes, swept your floor. If that's not love, what is? Right? Simple. If that's not love, what is? We've made things complicated. Why don't we just go back to the simple version? Some things, it's good that we've advanced and grown. I'm not calling for living like Amish people. I'm not talking about that. Although that wouldn't necessarily be so bad either, but I'm not calling for that. But in Emunah Pshuta, let's go back to Emunah Pshuta. Let's go back to Ava Pshuta. Let's go back to some simple definitions. B'derach zu, let's end with this. Yesh la'abit al inyanim ha'shal mofsim harab mishal yupozurim soviv ha'ashem tov mitzim esipurim shal odosov. So when you understand this, you can look at, this is a good way to see the miracles that surrounded the Baal Shem Tov, the legacy, and the story, the legends about the Baal Shem. All those stories, apocryphal or true, were all meant to communicate and educate that nothing is beyond Hashem. Put your trust, surrender, submit, believe, have faith, know He's involved in your life. Ein od milvado, nothing is beyond Him. And the story is never over. And you never know Yeshua Hashem Karefayim. You don't know. Who's more impressive? The sophisticated, complicated, Latin-speaking, not sure? Or the Yid with Emunah Pshuta, who's in the barn, feeding the cow, in a conversation with Hashem, who believes nothing's beyond him. Hashem, help me with this. Hashem, make that happen. Hashem, why'd you do this? Hashem, I'm so thankful that you did that. So through those stories, stories have a tremendous power. And through those stories, it helps promote and support our belief. And through those stories, we come to know. We come to know. Okay, all this was an introduction. I think we knew most of this already. But we'll get into next time with Mendel Wachter, such a beautiful sefer. We'll get into now some of his suggestions and ideas about how to be expressing this in a tangible, palpable way, how to give it life. Tzadik be'emunaso yichya. How a tzadik, their emuna, what, now we understand, translate those words. Tzadik be'emunaso yichya means a tzadik, emunaso, their emuna lives. Their emuna is alive. Their emuna is not just conceptual, abstract, somewhere. Their emuna is alive. Their emuna is alive. There's the person who knows with clarity and conviction that's their mother or their father, but that knowledge is dead. It's dormant because they don't show them any honor, any appreciation. They're not connected. And there's the person that, even without knowing that that's their father, if you're in a room and you see the way they interact, oh, that's the father. Because there, that paternity, it lives. Tzadik emunaso is yichya. It is alive and it is well. We're alive and well. I'm back. Baruch Hashem. Join the Emunah community, not just the group. And until next time, stay happy, stay healthy. And stay holy. Shri Besoros Tovos, Yeshua's Venachamas.